Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 16th, 2014. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott, your voice has changed.
Yeah.
Are you going through puberty?
Well, my wife, the beautiful Laura Long, attacked me the other night, and right in the voice box. So
she fractured your larynx, huh?
Yeah. No, it's not Scott, Chris. It's me. It's Mike.
It's Mike Faso.
That's right.
You know, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. It has been almost exactly 2 years since you've been on the show.
It's been 2 years ago, in fact, was the last time I listened to the show.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts so bad.
I'm kidding. But I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, I looked at the file, and it was like May 24th, 2012, and I'm just like, wow, wasn't that when the Mayans said the world would end? So that's probably why we haven't had you back.
Well, since then, believe it or not, I now have entered into the ranks of senior poker players.
Wait a minute.
I am now eligible to play in senior events. In fact, I'm now known as the best poker player never to have won a minor.
Wait a minute. I have to adjust to this. Are you telling me that you want to actually talk about poker on a poker show during the banter segment?
Why? Does Scott not like to do that?
You mean you don't want to talk about like a parking garage story or one night when you stumbled home from the local bar and saw a dead cat on the side of the road? I mean, come on, Mike. You know, you haven't been on the show in 2 years. You got to, you know.
I didn't realize this had become a training ground for America's Next Comic or something.
All right. So you're telling me now that you're old enough to play in senior events. Now, tell me what that means, because we have a recent advertiser who's promoting their Legends tournament out at the Binions during the World Series period of time, and their senior events are 45 now. They call it 45 is the new 50. So are you telling me that you're 45 or that you're 50?
Chris, are you 45 yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. I want you to stay out of my games because I'm the senior. You're not.
Okay.
Just quit trying to mooch into my territory here. No, I just turned 50 last year, and I'm wondering if it's even worth my while to try to get into any of these things because, frankly, are you dealing with what amounts to a nit fest? And for me, as a nit, to go into a nit fest, I really am not getting an advantage from that. I need to change my game significantly. So I don't know. I think it's something I might look at down the road. But I think those fields are going to be pretty tough, frankly, for the type of player I am.
Well, so you're saying that you are automatically thinking that these people are going to be nits because they're seniors? I mean, we're not talking about the stud game at Derby Lane when they're 75 years old. We're talking about usually no limit hold'em or whatever. And these guys, they're just 50. I mean, 50's not old. It's just senior. Yeah. That's all.
It seems like 50's old. When you get there, you'll okay. know what I mean.
But I think that you need to not bring that sort of stereotypical thinking into your approach if you start to enter there. Now, your other question was, is it worth entering? Now, to me, that's a real interesting question because what is the benefit of entering it? The fields will be smaller, right? there may be some nits who are playing with their retirement money, but I mean, you're 50, you're not retired. You can retire at 70 and 80 now, so that's not necessarily true. So I don't know. I think that if you are the kind of player that does well in a smaller field, you know, and prefers that, then maybe it's worth entering, you know. And it's also a field that limits the young whippersnappers who usually get on your nerves.
Those guys make me mad. They're always coming in for big raises. No, but I think you might get a more, maybe this is just totally wrong, but I think you would get a more consistent play that would enable you to exploit weaknesses more, because I know it's stereotypical to think of old people as all being a certain way, and obviously 50 is not old these days, but you are taking out a good segment of the poker population that you know, plays more aggressively, right, and erratically, and so it almost seems to me like it would be almost like a limit tournament in some respects, that there'd be less wild stuff going on. But I could be wrong. I mean, a lot of the older people, and I play with them all the time down at Derby Lane, they are just as capable of making crazy moves as a younger guy, but it just seems like not quite as often. So maybe it's a little more predictable.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to think about it, is that there's still going to be guys who are, you know, I mean, they may have even learned how to play poker when they were in their 40s because of the boom. And so now they know that aggressive poker is winning poker, and they see the crazy guys on TV. And so I don't think we're talking about the old biddies sitting around knitting a quilt and calling every $2 bet. You know, we're talking about some serious players still. So, I mean, you're right, though. I think the amount of, you know, hyper-aggressiveness will be pared down significantly.
Yeah.
But I think they're worth entering. I think, because I think you like that kind of game. I don't think you like a game where it's crazy and, you know, when you're playing cash games, that's one thing, because you're like, okay, I'll just sit back and get my money in with some maniac and double up on him and go home, which is something you love doing. But when it's a tournament, you know, and when you think of senior events, it has to be a tournament. So I think that's something that you would enjoy, actually, and not just because they probably have, you know, free coffee and donuts.
Well, I tell you what, when I come back here in 2 years' time, I will tell you how that tournament went.
Now, the other thing, too, is a lot of times when you enter a senior event, they often give away, like, Antioch poker cruises. So that's another reason for you to enter. I think Derby Lane is going to do that with their senior events for us, right, leading up to our Tampa cruise in December. Well, so there you go.
I'm planning to be on that cruise, so I will be down there.
Absolutely. Get down there and win the free spot instead of forking over the cash.
We'll do it.
Well, man, it's so awesome to have you back on the show. And, you know, it's interesting. And I think maybe next week I'll go off on the non-poker tangent just to satisfy everyone's, you know, I'm sure they're jonesing for one of Scott's, you know, useless stories. But
well, where is Scott?
He's on our cruise, the transatlantic one that's lasting like 6.5 months. And he gets into England, I think, on Friday, maybe on Saturday night, because, you know, we're taping our show on a Thursday like we always do. And then he's staying in England and then actually moving over through like Amsterdam and some other parts of the of Europe. He's going to finally get his something dirty there.
But he's going to get his ticket punched.
Yeah, he's going to get his ticket punched for the first time across the pond. So we're happy for Scott, but he's gone for 2 weeks, and, you know, he's so desperate to keep this streak alive that he'll do anything. And next week I'm going to ask you about what you think of what he wants to do when I'm in Italy for a month. I'll run that by you next week to get your impressions on it. But for now, we'll let Scott enjoy the fact that the streak is still going on, and he's somewhere in the Atlantic, probably losing at Omaha 8.
You know, though, the streaks, it's nice to keep them going, but if you keep them going at the expense of some things that I saw Cal Ripken do during his streak,
yes,
it really, really doesn't work for me.
Thank you very much.
But he's sliding into home plate like he's playing softball or something. I mean, you just realize that it was too much in the uppermost part of his mind, and he needed to just play the game.
So yeah.
just do the thing.
I totally agree. And so I think you'll be interested in next week then when
I want to hear
you,
that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's going on. But all right, so each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do a Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This comes from Kazan, and he wants to know, you know, what your responsibility is at the table. He said he was playing in a 1-1, $40 buy-in, no limit hold'em game, and he saw a situation come up where he felt a player was cheating. He said, I'm not sure if my reaction was ethical, though. A player in seat four across from him looked down at his hand before the flop and slyly pulls out about $20 in $1 chips. He pulled them out of his sweater pocket and put them on the table. He said he thinks the other players noticed too, but no one actually said anything. I do want to say that when this happened to him, he was still sort of a rookie cash game player, so he really wasn't sure what to do. We don't want to pile on to him here if we think he did the wrong thing. So he says that the seat four player then goes all in, but it turns out he only had 6-6, which was interesting. And seat seven, who had him covered, called with a higher pair. And, of course, our friend here didn't say anything because he wasn't 100% sure of the rules. The cheater in seat four, he keeps calling him a cheater, but we're not really sure if he's a cheater yet. We're going to talk about that later. He lost the hand and left the table. Now, was this the ethical thing to do? Because I often hear you guys say a player should speak up. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think I know this guy with the sweater. here's the thing. Looking through Kazan's explanation of this event, I picked up two things, first of all. He's inexperienced at cash games, mm-hmm. and B, he seems to be an honest person. So I think the inexperience, I don't think we should hold against him. My thinking on this is fairly straightforward. As soon as he saw the guy pulling chips out in the middle of a hand, he should have alerted the dealer or the floor or someone and pointed it out. I noticed that. And what you didn't say was that he mentioned that he was going to wait and see if the guy who pulled the chips out won the hand. And if he did, then he was going to say something. Well, I don't think that's the right way to go about it. It really shouldn't depend on whether the person gets punished for cheating in the hand or not. Pulling chips out in the middle of a hand is obviously cheating. I mean, cheating may be too strong a word, but it's something that needs to be stopped, and you need to call the floor or dealer over, and you know, maybe someone else saw it, and that can back up your story. It should have been reported as soon as he did it, I think.
I totally agree. The first thing I do is I look at the other guy and I say, is he bigger than me? Because am I going to get my ass kicked if I no, obviously. Here, a quick story. Scott and I were playing, I believe it was the Hard Rock in Vegas one time. We were playing cash games, and I was feeling really good. For some reason, I was doing really well in that game, and there was a guy at the table, and he had like his girlfriend or his wife with him or something, and he had a big stack when I sat down. Actually, Scott and I were at the same table, which is really rare. We hardly ever play Nolan and Holden together, and to be at the same table was even weirder. So, but Scott's on my right, and this guy's across from me. Like, I'm at, like, seat three, and he's at, like, eight. So we're, like, the full table length away. And he had a big stack when we sat down. I took a pretty significant amount of that from him. And then a few hands later, I looked at his stack, and he hadn't played any other hands, but almost all of his chips were gone. And so I spoke up. You know, it's exact reverse. But yeah, I spoke up. I was like, hey, you can't go south. You know, what the hell's going on? He's like, what are you talking about? I said, you had more chips than that. He's like, well, thanks for bringing up my pain, you know, that I've lost here. And I'm like, no. I mean, you had more chips just a couple of hands ago and you haven't played a hand. And I called him out on it, and he got up and left. So I think he did go south. But you have to speak up because it's not fair to – what if seat seven and lost and the guy had 20 extra dollars there and now that guy's losing $20 more than he should have. And then if you had spoken up then it's like, now you look terrible, because you're like, oh, I'll wait till he wins and then I'll say something, because then they have to go to the Eye in the Sky, you're delaying the game, and you didn't do the ethical thing when you were supposed to do it. You know, it's like the person looking for accolades, you know, after the fact, when they realized they would get accolades if they had spoken up, you know, and that's not the right thing to do. So I think you're absolutely right. He should have said something right away. And you don't have to be a jerk about it. You just say, oh, wait, you can't do that, right? You just say something like that,
yeah.
You know?
Put it in the form of a question.
Exactly.
Like, hey, dealer, he just added chips in the middle of the hand. Can he do that?
Yeah, or can I do that? You know, make it sound like you're totally ignorant and you want to do it too. And then they say, oh, no, you can't do that. See, dealer, you know, let's say, sir, put that money back in your pocket or whatever. But it's funny that he thought 6-6 was worth putting 20 more bucks down for.
Yeah. Well, it's funny also, I haven't heard that term go south in a long time, because you know my preferred term for that.
Rat holing. Yes, yes. Because you're a rat and you just put some money in your hole.
I will say this. I don't know if you've. I'm sure everyone has run into this. I haven't seen it lately. The so-called table captain.
Oh, yeah, you don't see it because you're him.
No, I'm not. This is the person who points out every little thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Is basically running the game instead of the dealer. There's a limit to how far you can go with this kind of thing. For example, where I play, it's not uncommon for people to show their neighbor their hand before they fold.
Yeah.
And then they muck, and or they show it during the hand if the neighbor has already folded. And I mean, how far do you want to go with that kind of thing? Technically, I don't think they're supposed to be doing that, and if they are, everyone's supposed to be able to see what those cards are at some point. But are you going to continue to, you know, bring that up every time it happens? I tend to let some things go. The other thing I do that I do myself, if I buy in for like 80 at the Derby Lane 1-1 game, and I buy in for, you know, I get $100 worth of chips, so I have four reds.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lose a couple hands, and maybe, you know, I haven't gone down to 60, but maybe I've gone down to like 70 or 68 or something. I'll just pull those other four chips out onto the table, and I'll top up to 85 or whatever, even though that's technically illegal, because I'm not going to, you know, micromanage that stack. Is that wrong, Chris?
Well, since you're pointing it out that you know it's wrong, then I would say that it's wrong. You know, I mean, really, you're saying you pull out four reds to get to 85 when you can just pull out three reds and get to 80.
Okay,
so,
all right.
So if you know that it's wrong, then it's wrong. But again, you know, but I know what you're saying about, do you really want to be the table captain that's pointing out every single thing? You know, eventually people aren't going to want to play with you, or you are going to run into the drunk guy who wants to fight you and, you know, take you out.
You seem to be worried about getting beat up quite
well,
a lot.
Hey, you know, when I'm at the poker room, you know, there's not always security there. You know, I mean, and then when you do get them, you got to call and ask for them, and they take 20 minutes to get them. You know, who wants that? So I just want to go in there. I want to play poker. I want to win some money, and I want to go home. I don't want confrontation. That's not my game. A lot of guys love that. They want to get you off your game by confronting you, and it's just part of their repertoire or whatever. But for me, so, I don't want that.
You don't want to try to needle people. I've never seen you do that.
Well, I've done that when I'm friends with somebody and we're joking around, but I certainly don't do it to strangers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just our personalities when we're friends and we're knowing, you know, what gets under the skin and joking around because we're getting together. But when it's, you know, some complete stranger and I'm sort of naive to the rules like Kazan was, you know, I certainly don't want to get my ass beat just because this guy wanted to put 20 whites on the table. But I do need to say something, and just do it in a nice way, and I think you'll be all right. You know, it's kind of like, you know, people who give you backhanded compliments, you know. Well, I've never seen anybody with greasy hair look as pretty as you. You know, something like that, you know. It's like, okay. So you just be careful at the table, but yes, Kazan, you should have spoken up, I think.
You know, Chris, you've got a really big nose, but it actually matches your face.
Yes, but it matches. Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, for a senior citizen, you talk pretty clearly there, Mike, you know. So are you starting to get, like, the AARP stuff in the mail?
I've thrown away at least three flyers from them. I guess I probably ought to go ahead and sign up. I don't I don't know why I didn't. I just was kind of angry.
Yeah, I think Gene's the same way, because my wife's old enough to get that stuff, too, and she's like, throw that out.
Not that I'm against discounts. I mean, I'm as bad as Scott with, you know, chasing down discounts. And
yeah.
But I'm just trying to let it sink in for a while. I still feel pretty young, actually.
All right, so, you know, we have our Call the Floor segment each week, and for the people who, when they find themselves in a situation, when they're in their poker room or in their home game, and they're not really sure what the proper ruling should have been, we ask them to email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we have our Annie Up Poker Tour Tournament Director, Sam Minatello, tell us how he would have ruled. Our longtime listener, and probably the funniest name, Turdzilla, which is a pretty popular name, I think. I think a lot of kids are named Turdzilla. It's like right up there with, you know, I don't know, Agamemnon. I don't know. But he says, I have begun playing more Pot Limit Omaha, and the player's behavior at the table has been much worse than at No Limit Hold'em. Yeah, try playing Omaha 8 at Binion's. Then tell me about behavior. He says, the floor at my local casino doesn't want to be too aggressive in banning players for bad behavior, and the better players do not want the tilting fish to leave before they are broke. The last time I played, one of the guys crumpled up his cards, which required a new deck. How do you even crumple plastic cards? I don't know.
Tough.
And he says, later he threw a losing hand across the table. Mike, he was playing with you.
Well, that's okay to do that.
That's okay to just whip the cards and have him hit the dealer in the forehead, right? That's fine. That's never happened to me.
That was a special case. I can defend myself on that.
Yeah, you. I guess they would classify your actions as special on that one. So, while both incidents received a reprimand from the floor, the player was not punished or thrown out. He also was vocal and condescending about the play at the table. What is considered a punishable offense? What is the range of punishment? And what should a player do to express his displeasure with another player's behavior?
Punch him in the nose?
Take him outside?
Well, Sam responds to this by saying that abusive behavior is not permissible at a poker table, and it's the poker room's responsibility to not allow behavior like this. Crumbling cards and throwing cards across the room are unacceptable behavior, and this player should have been asked to leave for the day. The floor is responsible to discuss the player's actions with them away from the table to prevent future incidents. And if the behavior continues, then the poker room might want to consider some time away from the poker room, a little time out. Sam says he would start with a few days and progress from there if needed. And this player's actions cause other players' experiences at the table to be unenjoyable, no matter how much money they lose in the game. And I think I know this guy, too. Believe it or not.
You probably do. You've been around. You're 50 years old. You've seen it all.
I've seen it all. The time I threw a card at a dealer, it was not right, just like when I top up for more than the right amount.
Right.
But I can have some justification in that this was a dealer who was giving people in a tournament ungodly amounts of time for their action, not paying attention to the game, and not keeping the game moving. And I was making all my plays within like 2 seconds of when it was on my action. And then at one point, at a very critical bubble point of the tournament, some guy shoved and I needed to decide whether to call or not. And I never do this, but I actually asked him, do you want me to call? I was trying to pick up something. And within 2 seconds, the dealer snapped at me and said, let's keep the game moving. We can't have this talking. I mean, this was after he'd run the game so lax for 3 hours. And now all of a sudden he's becoming Butch Boss when I want to take a little extra time on an all-in decision. So I folded the hand and I flung the cards and they sailed right into his forehead. And that I was told that was not something that they do at that particular card room. And I tell you what, I've never done it since. So,
all right. Well, a couple of questions before I'm going to talk about the call the floor thing too here. But so, how do you play for 3 hours with the same dealer when they have 20-minute dealers?
I wondered if you'd pick up on that.
Yeah. What's the deal? So basically, the other dealers were screwing you. Then you get a normal dealer doing what he's supposed to do, and then you take it out on him.
No, I was exaggerating.
Okay. So, so
this
but
was it, during his one down.
It was during his one down. He was letting people do whatever they wanted. And then when it got to
and
you,
then when it got to me, he all of a sudden tightened up the rules of the, you know, the table became you know, a picture of order when I had to take an extra second.
So let me ask you this. What, was it one of those flings that was really on the felt, but it hydroplaned and went up his arm and then, like, ricocheted into his head? Or did you, like, just fling it in the air like you were trying to throw cards into a hat?
I brought the cards up to eye level, and I just flung them at him. And they ended up in his forehead.
And did he call the floor?
He called the floor, yeah.
And then what happened to you?
They came over. He explained what happened, and the floor said that okay, we don't do that here. And I said okay.
And that was it, though. He didn't punish you.
Oh no, this was several years ago. This was before we got into a lot of this structured punishment that people do now, where you sit out a round in a tournament and all that stuff. It was just a warning, and he just told me don't do that, and that was all it took.
And it was local, right? It wasn't like Vegas or anything.
It was Derby Lane.
It was Derby Lane. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is what I like about Sam. I even recall when Sam ran the room locally here, because now he's traveling the country, you know, running rooms and stuff like that. But, you know, when he was local, you know, we'd go down there to hang out with him, enter a tournament, or, you know, or do a story for the magazine or something. And he would tell us, you know, that he had banned a couple of people. And that's what he did. He followed through on things.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's what I like about Sam is he runs a tight ship. But he's not like Attila the Hun.
Bligh.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Not like Captain Bligh.
Exactly.
Tough. He's tough, but he's fair and he's reasonable.
Yep, and he follows through, because the guys, you know, there are a lot of guys who will be afraid to throw a guy out because then they'll think that they're going to lose business. Or he's not like that. He's like, you know, I know the players are going to respect this, that this guy's making everyone else miserable. I'd rather have the other not eight or nine guys at the table happy and lose this guy, then keep him around and lose chance of losing the other eight or whatever. And that, you got to respect Sam that way. He's always been very professional when it comes to how to treat the players and how to treat the ones who are being abusive. So I totally agree with his decision and what he said. And I think, I mean, I'm not sure what Turdzilla was bringing up here. I can't say that name without laughing. I'm sorry. you know, as far as, you know, whether or not this guy or whatever should have been thrown out or something. I mean, I think it takes a lot to be thrown out.
Yeah. Well, he asked what should a player do to express his displeasure. Again, that's something where if it gets so bad that the dealer's not doing anything, first of all, you would think the dealer should be calling the floor over and explaining that this guy just wadded up some cards and is throwing them around the room. If that's not happening, then maybe the player needs to step up and take action himself.
Yeah, and then again, you look at the player and you say, is he bigger than me? Because if he's bigger than you, you might not like the way you played, but you're definitely not going to like the way he kicks your ass. So be careful.
A recurring theme in this show.
Yes,
Chris is afraid of getting his ass beat.
That's all we got to do at the home game, Mike, is if you don't want me to call, I'll just threaten to kick my ass, and I'll fold like a cheap tent. So, all right, so we got a brand new Always Mally's move, and here's the deal. You know, we always listen to the first part, and then we talk about everything next week. So that means that Mike Fassler is going to be back next week for another episode. So everybody should be very happy. Back-to-back Mike Fasso. See, now we're not going to wait 2 years for you to come back. We're only going to wait 7 days. So, okay, so here we go with a brand new O'Malley's Move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing 1-2 No Limit Hold'em, and we've already lost a buy-in. We rebought and currently sit with 175, down another 25. It's been a rough night. The table's action has been steady with a maniac or two, typical No Limit Hold'em. It gets folded around to the button, who makes it $7 to go. He's one of these maniacs. He's been running pretty good lately, and he currently has us covered with around 350. The small blind folds, and we look down in the big blind at the 6 of spades, 6 of clubs. This is worth a look at the flop, and we decide to make the call. With about $15 in the pot, the flop comes down the ace of hearts, 10 of spades, 6 of diamonds. This is an excellent flop for our hand, and since we're first to act, we decide to slow play a little. We check. Our opponent makes a $10 bet into the pot, and at this point, we're still in slow playing mode. We make the call. The turn brings the 5 of clubs. This is pretty much a blank. It doesn't change a whole lot. We elect to keep up our slow play and check. With $35 in the pot, our opponent makes a $15 bet. Once again, we simply call. There's $65 in the pot, and the river is the 4 of hearts. Hopefully he's got one more bullet in the chamber, because once again, we slow play and check. He wastes little time in betting $20 into the pot. After some thought, which I'll admit had an element of Hollywood, we end up making a raise to $40. At this point, with little hesitation, our opponent moves all in. What could he be playing here? Is there any logical hand that beats us? What's the move?
All right, it's time for our hand of the week. And don't forget, you can send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll do our best to analyze your mistakes. So, this comes from Dan England, and you know, it's a lot of our longtime listeners have been contributing to the show today, and I always love it when these guys send us stuff. And this is more of a situation, Scott liked to say, situation. But you don't listen to the show anymore, so you wouldn't know that he says that.
I do listen to the show. I not every show.
All right. So he says that he's in Vegas. Now I'm gonna wait to see what you have to say about this, because I don't know exactly what I would do. So I want to hear what you have to say. But he says, I'm in Vegas after 4 3-hour sessions. I was up $300 for the trip. But now he's 15 minutes from leaving, okay? Which is, it seems like most of our hands and situations come at this point.
It always happens like that.
Yes, I don't understand. He said it's been a good session against mostly weak players. He's up about 225 in a 1-2 no-limit game, and he bought in for 200. So he's got about 425 in front of him. But there are about 3 stacks at the table that have him covered easily. He said he gets king-king in early position. He said it may even have been under the gun, which I don't really think it matters. But he raises to 15. Uh-huh. This raise is a little larger than normal, but I want to try to prevent a lot of callers. A guy in late position re-raises me to 100, which to me is funny, and he'll say later on that it's not. But there are 2 callers in between. So yeah. You got 15, 50, so you got 45 in the pot. But he said, it's not that weird of a raise, but to me, that's more than 3 times. It's like almost 3 times a pot bet there. It's like 2.5 for the pot. So it seems pretty weird, but he says the player who re-raised him is the most aggressive one at the table, especially with his pre-flop action, and he's one of the ones that has him covered. Earlier that night, someone shoved on him, and he called. The player had queen-queen, and he had aces. So he remembers thinking to himself, man, that's a tough deal to get that hand against such an aggressive player. He's only re-raised one other time in the 3 hours that he's been at the table, and that was when he had ace-king, but that was to put a short stack all in. He doesn't seem overly confident with his hand, but he obviously likes it. I can't get a read on him either way. So, Mike, what are you thinking at this point? You've got king-king. You're against a player who made a ridiculous re-raise against you. And when you've seen him re-raise like this before, it was because the other guy was a short stack and he only had ace-king, and then or he had aces in another hand. So, really, what are you thinking here? What are you going to do?
Well, I think when he says that this guy has only re-raised one other time in 3 hours, and when he did that, he had ace-king. Tells me that, as aggressive as he is saying this player is, that maybe he's not as aggressive as he appears. I mean, if he's open-raising a lot, that's an active player, but to have only re-raised once in 3 hours, maybe that's a normal amount for that time in that game, but that would raise some red flags with me. The other thing is, I'm probably never going to fold this hand. I did come up with a somewhat similar situation when I was playing at Mandalay Bay a few years ago. Uh-huh. Within an hour, twice, I had pocket queens. I had, in one case, I had open raised in a 1-2 game and was re-raised a giant amount, and I folded. Because it was the guy in the 10 seat, he was an old guy. Here we go with the old
stuff. Yeah, the old senior stuff again, yeah.
He was very snug, and I thought, okay, I've got queens. What are the chances of him making that giant re-raise with jacks? And I thought the chances of that are just about zero. So it turns out he flashed his cards. He had aces, and so I was right. Now, maybe I didn't make the right play, but I folded. Now, the other time, at the same table with this same guy, I was dealt queens again. And this time, I think he opened for a normal-size raise. I had queens. I three-bet him, and then he came over the top, and I instantly folded those. So, now, the point is, though, that's queens, and it turns out, again, I was right on that. He had kings in that case. Does the fact that I was right to fold mean that I made the right decision based on what the cards were? I mean, we can get into that. But the fact that he was who he was, the fact that I had queens, which is different from kings, and the fact that he was, very tight player, that was not that difficult of a fold. In this case, it's a little bit different. I mean, kings are something, like I say, I'm probably never going to fold those. I don't know, calling it probably isn't an option here. I'm probably just going to go ahead and shove at this point. But again, with the caution that you got $15 in this pot and you're ready to catch a plane, I mean, are you willing to just leave the table and just – obviously, if you keep folding kings, that's not going to be a profitable move over the long run. But this is the short run, and the short run is you're ahead and you got $15 invested and you're ready to go. So with all those situations put into play – it may not be quite as cut and dried as I think.
Yeah, you make a good point about, you know, it's funny. I while you were speaking about the hands that you had faced similar situations, and I remember there was a 15 minutes left in my session years ago at Foxwoods, and I had run over the table because it was one of those tables where you all started with 100. We had just started a fresh table, and I had built it up to like 600. And I had 15 minutes left. My wife was on her way back from where she was visiting. And I'm like, I got to go in 15 minutes. And I looked down at King. It's the exact same sort of situation. And I didn't fold. And a guy and I got it all in. He had Queen. But it wasn't the same, like, you know, he only re-raised once during. I mean, he was the kind of guy that I thought I can get a lot of money out of. And he ended up having Queen. I ended up having one of the biggest sessions of my life because of that. So I didn't fold because it's hard to fold King, but I have folded King before pre-flop in a cash game, but it was painfully obvious it was ace. This situation here for Dan, I don't know what I do here either. This is why I wanted to run it by you, because I just don't know. And like you said, the only time in 3 hours he re-raised, he only had ace-king. So do you respect that he can only do this re-raise with ace-king again, or with ace-ace only, or King, the other King, you know? I don't know, but really, you're only ahead of one hand. Would he do it with Queen, just like you said, would the guy do it with Jack? Would this guy do this kind of a raise, which is significant? I mean, let's look at it. Let's look at a regular raise would be 45, but there were two more limpers, so you're looking at maybe 75. He put at least $25 more than on the max bet that you generally would re-raise here. is he maybe he's trying to make you think he only has something like a smaller pair and he doesn't want anybody to go to the flop with him. You know, that's what he's doing. I don't know. I
never am going to read that raise as a medium or small pair.
Not even like Jack-Jack?
Well, if you call that medium, I guess. To me, that it almost sniffs out a little bit like Ace-King to me, that big raise. A lot of people like to play that for all their chips, and I've seen that quite a bit. Where people will go to the wall with ace king pre-flop, you know, trying to double up or whatever, get unstuck. So it smells like ace king a little bit. I think, like I said, but the chances of it being something small, I think, are not good given this guy's history.
Okay, so here's what Dan had to say. He says, I don't like calling, so I think he agrees with you there. Me, I don't know if I like calling either, just because I've only got 400 in front of me now, and I'm calling 25% of my stack. You know, I mean, I don't like to ever really call more than 10% of my stack. If I'm going to put in more than that, I want to be putting it in, not calling it in. So maybe I agree with that. He also says, I'll be out of position if he had called, and then we're going to wind up getting it all in anyway, probably. Plus, another caller might come along if he just calls, and that leaves him playing against two players with a pair, you know, with his own pair. So he said, plus the pot would be more than $200, and then it'll leave me with $325 if I call. You know, what options do I have at that point? So he says, so in his mind, the best thing to do is shove or fold, so he shoves. And he says, here was my reasoning, and you can let me know if it's flawed thinking. He says, one, he's an aggressive player, and his range is more than simply ace-ace. There's a chance he has queen-queen and ace-king, and even in my mind, jack-jack. He says, I think in a lot of the 1-2 games, a re-raise like that means ace-ace, but in this case, I think there are some hands I can beat. That makes sense, right? So then, well, I guess we can talk about that real quick. I mean, I asked you, too, about would he have made a raise that big with jack-jack because he didn't want something like ace-king or king-queen, which could have easily been...
Right.
You know, and then also, too, the other two limpers, not limpers, but callers, you know, he's trying to get them out, too, because he knows how susceptible jack-jack is to, you know, the three overcards. So, you know, it's possible that this guy could have had jack-jack or queen-queen, I think. I think he would do that with queen-queen. But, really, you're only ahead of queen-queen and ace-king, and you're tying king-king. So you're right, it's tough to call. So he says, anyway, here comes a flawed thinking. He's already had ace-ace tonight. The odds of him getting them again are pretty low. Okay, that's clearly flawed thinking. And every single hand, the odds never change. It makes no difference.
I mean, it's nice that he can say, here comes the flawed thinking, and then he lays out the flawed thinking, and that's what he was thinking.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of self-awareness to realize that when you're thinking something that's that flawed, you're actually aware of it, and yet you're still thinking it. My hat's off. In that case, that's a form of self-delusion, and I don't mean anything against the listener. It's just I've done it myself.
Yeah.
It's like, how many times can this guy beat me? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, never think that because somebody had ace-ace, he can't have ace-ace again, because that's not right at all. It's not that you're going to be dealt 220, you know, hands before you get aces again. It's just the odds of that happening are 220-1 or whatever. You know, it's not. So don't think like that. That is flawed thinking. That should never come into your mind. So then he says, the last three times, and I swear this is true, I've had king-king, I've run against ace-ace. I did so in two home game tournaments and a limit game in Deadwood. So it hasn't cost me dearly. But honestly, how many times can that happen to someone in a row? The odds of that are really low, aren't they? Again, flawed thinking. You can't think like that. There's no bearing on the current hand. It's kind of like the person who falls for the tracker on roulette when they see all the numbers coming out. And they think, look, there's 10 reds in a row. It has to come black next time. No, it's still basically 50-50. You know, you got the greens on there sometimes, but it's not going to change. The odds are the same every single time. So you can't think that way.
I mean, it's even more flawed to start bringing in hands from other states.
I know.
When you're making these comparisons.
It happened in Deadwood.
Like,
it has to happen every like year in Vegas.
1973, I had a hand.
Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you use that voice and say, but I have short arms? Will you say that for me?
But I have short arms.
Oh, man. You sound just like the guy at Foxwoods. All right. So, anyway, he says, remember, I'm the guy who wrote in a couple of years ago about folding King King as Ace Ace because of a stereotype. All right. So, we understand that. You're afraid of Ace Ace. We get it. But you can't do that. You can't say, all right, it can't happen again, and it's happened to me a lot. And I mean, he's basically weighing that it can't happen, but then he's saying it always happens. And so you're just screwed no matter what you do. You got to just play the hand and play the person and play the situation. You're 15 minutes away from clearing over $300 on your trip. Just fold.
Is that your advice?
I think so. So anyway, he says it's easy to fall into this kind of thinking, isn't it, even though it has no bearing on the cards in front of you. So I shoved, and I wish, honestly, I'd folded. And that's why this hand bothers me. It was a cash game. I was 15 minutes from leaving, and I should have thought to myself that I only had $15 invested in the pot. I would have been fine with leaving with $225 in profit and call it a successful weekend. The odds were pretty high with that move that he either had ace-ace or queen-queen, and I put a lot of money in the hopes that he had queen-queen, or even ace-king, really. I'm typically a winning player at these limits, and I'm up so far this year, but I'm not a shark, especially with my limited opportunities to play. Being up $1,000, $2,000 at the end of the year leaves me satisfied. Anyway, I shoved, he paused for a bit, then called with ace-ace. The board was no help, and I went away with $100 profit for the weekend because I left knowing that my head wasn't in a good place. Also, next time I get king-king, I'm folding right away. Yeah, it's terrible that happened to you. I just think that you need to always address each hand for the merits of that hand at that moment, at that table, at that casino, at that game. You know, you can't let
you know
what happened in the past.
The other thing that occurs to me is that you know how some people can play without even looking at their cards?
Right.
In this situation, if you're at a point where you're just uncomfortable playing a big pot, somebody makes a gigantic raise like that, and it all of a sudden you're talking about playing for most of your chips. If you're not comfortable playing for a big pot like that, there's no shame in folding no matter what your cards are.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just not – you can just, you know, punt.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Pass.
Yeah.
You don't have to play every hand. And I know King-King, like I said at the beginning of this, I would have instantly shoved on this hand. And so I would have done the same thing that he did. But if you're ever in a position where you're getting close to leaving, you've booked a nice, you're up a nice amount, somebody comes in and makes a big raise that's going to cost you most of your stack, and you don't feel comfortable playing the hand, there's no one saying you have to play every hand. Even those hands.
No, absolutely. I mean, you tend to want to not play that way just because if you decided to stay, somebody would expose you for the folder that you might be. And then, you know what I mean? That's a weakness. All they got to just keep re-raising you when you raise. And the only time you call is when you know you have ace-ace, and then they just get away from it. So if you're not comfortable playing for the means that you're sitting down with, then you shouldn't play. Now, this isn't Dan at all. I mean, we know how Dan plays, and we know that he's comfortable playing this.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm just saying, yeah, you're right. If there are some beginners out there who are thinking about breaking into a cash game, and you're not really – if it's going to tear you up that you sat down with 200 and 10 minutes later you had no money and you went home broke and it's going to kill you, then maybe you shouldn't sit down with that money. Maybe you should either sit down with 100 or wait to sit down or – you know, join an illegal website or something. I don't know. But really, that's the thing is...
What I do. When I play at these little games, because I'm pretty much a beginner, really, when you think about it. Even though I've been playing for a long time, I really haven't gotten any better over the years. So I'm still playing in these small games. And if I get up $40 in a 1-1 game, and I look around, and I've got something better to do, and I want to go ahead and book that win, I'll just leave.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and try to run it up to some big amount. I'm happy, you know, I'll take the $40, I'll go buy groceries, and I'll be happy as a clam.
That's the thing. If you do what makes you happy, you know, yeah. if booking a win makes you happy, then book the win. If just playing poker makes you happy, then play poker. You know, that's the thing. I don't like to, like, for me, we're very fortunate, you and I, because we have poker rooms very close to us. We have a bunch.
Yeah.
So it's not like we have to drive an hour, 2 hours to a poker room and then regret. Or I'm not going to drive. Like when I lived in Connecticut, it would take me an hour to get to Foxwoods.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm not going to, if I book a $40 win on hand three, I'm not going to turn around and go home because it's an hour ride.
Yeah.
But with us, it's 15 minutes to Derby Lane. And, you know, if you book a $45 win and you've been there a little while and you're like, you know what, the game's kind of changing a little bit.
Right.
I could really go home and watch that movie that's coming on HBO 8 o'clock, or, you know,
yeah, right.
You know, and then you do it, but you got to do what makes you happy. What makes, because our show is not about playing poker for a living. It's about entertaining ourselves and winning some money. And if that's what you're going to do and that's going to make you happy, then do it. Dan, I would have folded too. I'm sorry that you didn't. But I think being up that much, knowing that I'm literally leaving in a few minutes, I mean, really, yeah, okay, so there's that chance that you'd be up another $300 or $400, you know, if you're right and he has queen-queen. But then again, he could fold queen-queen, and then you're only up that extra 100. But if you're wrong, you're down the 400 that you were up. So
you would have folded that hand, Chris?
I think I don't know, maybe. It depends. I didn't fold it when I was at Foxwoods that time. I had 15 minutes left, but I just felt like that player was not the player that this guy
right.
could have been. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And he didn't have me covered either. This guy had Dan covered. So, yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
You folded kings before, though, right?
I have folded kings pre-flop in cash games before, more than once.
Yeah.
And both times I was fortunate to see ace-ace, so I knew that there was the right fold. You know, online, too, I've done it. I've done it online in cash games because, you know, I just don't, you know, online, man, you just don't know. You know, I just don't know what's coming. So I folded it online before, too. But then I didn't see ace-ace. Well, there was one hand I think I did, and I was sitting in the chat box, and when the hand was over, I'm like, hey, king-king. He said, oh, you got to let it go there. Obviously, the guy's got ace-ace, and then, you know. But, yeah, I don't know if I fold the king-king, to be completely honest here. I don't know. I don't know if I shove, either. I know he doesn't like the call because he's out of position, and, you know, if it comes all unders, you know, but the thing about the call is if an ace comes and he did have ace king, you can get away from the hand. You only lost 100 instead of.
Well, that I did think of that. If you call and an ace shows up on the flop, you can fold.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, anything other than that, and it's all going to get in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for sending that. Us that hand, Dan. Feel sorry for you that you lost, but remember, just don't think about the past experiences. They have no bearing on the current hand. So, hey, Mike, thanks for joining us again today, and again, you're going to be back next week when we can wrap up the O'Malley's move as well, and I'm really eager to see what you think about our attempt to keep the streak alive. When I'm
Larry, can I finish, Larry? I will be back.
Excellent. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Did you hear about the dyslexic screenwriter who submitted a story treatment for 24 in which Jack Bauer goes rouge?
Rouge. Oh, man. Apply makeup another day.
Chris, do you think Canadian Aborigines go walkabout? This is my stand-up career.
I was going to say, you totally missed your calling. When I become
an old guy and I can't work anymore, I'm going to do open mic nights.
So basically, you're going to be doing them this week, is what you're saying.